If you're someone who tries to stay somewhat informed about financial markets and personal finance, you've probably had the same frustrating experience that I've often had, despite the fact that I'm a financial professional. You block out an hour or two to catch up on financial news, advice on your favorite big name sites or blogs, but then somewhere along the line, you're overwhelmed with the feeling that you can't be sure whether what you're reading is relevant to you, or whether it's just more fluffy infotainment than useful insight, or even worse, you start to suspect that some of the sites and authors may have hidden biases or sales or marketing agendas. Sometimes you follow one too many links hoping to get a better grip on a certain topic, and suddenly you feel like you're being pulled in a half dozen directions at once by sites that want to maximize their ad revenues. Hate that. Distinguishing signal from noise is one way to put it. You know, the useful content from a thousand forms of distraction and mediocrity is almost never a walk in the park. Filtering it all takes time and effort, and this is perhaps especially true with an always-on, always-real-time news cycle, an extreme competition for eyeballs and attention from online journalists in that blogosphere, and massive information overload. So, that said, there are ways to make this task more manageable, and your reading time and choices more valuable. Now, as I mentioned, this is a problem even for finance pros like myself who are faced with it on a daily basis. Robert Martorana, in an interesting blog post from August 2016 that inspired my commentary today, tells a story about a portfolio manager who advised him that half the research on his desk was a complete waste of time. And after digesting this lesson, Martorana realized that he needed to work on what you might call his BS meter. You know what I'm saying. Rather than reading less, portfolio managers must learn to rapidly detect what is nonsense and move on. It's a necessary skill when confronted with the hype and sensationalism now masquerading as news. There are press releases that spin the facts. There are earnings reports that ignore basic arithmetic, and the comments from CEOs are the kind that test the boundaries of probability. The problems for readers looking for solid info run even deeper than the very real issue of all this hype and spin. We're manipulated by writers who attempt to influence readers in a variety of ways. Many investment blogs now follow a tabloid formula of simplify, then exaggerate. The pseudo-news and pseudo-analysis peddled by countless sites is fundamentally and often intentionally flawed. As Martorana puts it, fear sells, fact-checking is passé, misinformation is rampant, and track records of past predictions are irrelevant. So we need to develop skills as readers and critical thinkers to cope with these quicksands. Here's some questions that you should be asking about any article that you're reading. First, is the article based on data or is it based on opinion? And you need to know that right up front. If it's opinion and you're looking for facts, you need to move on to something else. Is it descriptive of past conditions or is it predictive of the future? And then finally, does the article have a testable hypothesis? Now, this isn't to say that opinion pieces are a bad thing, and that studying the past is a waste of time, or that articles without scientific footing are always wrong or useless. Editorials have their place when they're supported by facts and data. Analytical writing, on the other hand, that resorts to editorializing truly deserves your skepticism. Think pieces that analyze past market moves and draw conclusions from them to explain the present or future can sound authoritative and convincing because, as human beings, we're wired to crave explanations, and we're often too quick to ignore data that doesn't fit the story or to give up searching for other explanations. However, it's important to pause and remember that hindsight is 20/20, and realize that basing an argument on historic events that produced well-known results is far easier than dealing with a more chaotic present and unknown future. Keeping this in mind allows you to see the limits of an article's value as a guide to what's happening now or might happen tomorrow or next year. Now, this strikes me as especially true and relevant in an investment context. Because you remember, as they say, past performance is no guarantee of future results. and you should be on the lookout for writing which suggests that the past is the key to the future. This is good information. This is good advice to help you get it right out there. Now, on a personal note, I will tell you that practically everyone I sit down with these days wants to know what I think about the future of the economy and the stock market. I tell them I really don't know because I can't tell the future. And then they ask me about the direction of the stock market in particular, and when they do, I quote Sir John Templeton. Now, he was the so-called father of the mutual fund industry and truly one of the world's great investors. He said he doesn't know the direction of the next 1,000 points, but he knows the direction of the next 5,000 points. The implication, of course, is that the next 5,000 points is going to be higher. Now, in the surface of becoming better investors, here are some additional concepts to help strengthen our critical thinking and muscles and gain deeper comprehension of a topic or argument. First, understand the consensus. The first thing you want to do is seek out what the mainstream point of view is. And you can find that in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, or Bloomberg, or the New York Times, those kinds of periodicals. It's impossible to develop a counterargument, or for that matter, an independent perspective, without knowing what the mainstream is. So you want to know what the mainstream narrative is. Number two, seek disagreement. If you have a conviction about an idea or belief, make sure to consider the other side of the trade. And you want to familiarize yourself with the reasoning of someone with an opposing conviction, and that's going to help you avoid what is called confirmation bias, which is when we interpret new information as confirming what we already believe. Later on in the show, I have Mark Faber, and Mark Faber is a noted contrarian. I like to have him on the show because I get to hear the other side of thinking, because I'm generally an optimist, and look for the economies to grow and the stock markets to follow. I want to hear what someone who's a contrarian has to say. But then you want to question the narrative. You know, for various reasons, journalists don't always frame a story in the most objective or straightforward way. And this framing is often incomplete, misleading, and flat out wrong. Number four is respect the data. If you're researching corporate earnings and financial statements or economic data, look for sites that provide numbers, charts, and tables. And if possible, go to the primary sources rather than just the journalistic summaries. Also, avoid a partisan interpretation. Try to suspend your political leanings when reading the news. You know, remember that the economy is on its own track and moves in a direction with great momentum and power. Political discussions change like the weather. So I always tell clients to make sure that they separate their politics from what is happening in the economy. And then finally, develop your own framework. Now, this is another one, and this is hard. To the extent that you can develop an independent, cohesive view of the investment strategy and your goals, the less vulnerable you will be to being overly influenced by media. Don't think every news story is actionable. There are thousands of new articles published every day. Very, very few of them should ever compel you into action. And remember, as I always say, that doing nothing as an investor is an active decision. So you want to respect that. You don't always have to do something. So to wrap this up, I want to quote from Ben Carlson, who wrote an article entitled How to Read Financial News Headlines. And I just love this. So he says that when you read the following in a headline, stocks rose or stocks fell today by 1% because of, and they give a reason, you need to read it like this. Millions of shares traded hands today because investors all have different goals, strategies, risk profiles, and holding periods and ideas. When you see the headline that states a popular economist or fund manager or hedge fund billionaire expects market volatility to pick up later this year, you should read it as saying you expect volatility to pick up at some point in the future is like saying you expect it to rain at some point in the future. And volatility works both ways, to the upside and the downside. So really, this is just a way of saying that markets will fluctuate, which of course they will. So ignore that. When you read George Soros gained or lost $1 billion, so how to read it is that, hey, Soros has $25 billion, so what he does with his money shouldn't concern most investors. Here's another headline. Markets got slaughtered today because, or markets got slaughtered today, is this a sign of worse things to come? Well, you know, no one really ever knows why stocks rise and fall on a single day. The market is up just over 50% of all trading days, and it's down just under 50% of all trading days, too. So you never can put too much emphasis on market action in any one day. If the headline says investors are dealing with more uncertainty, you read it, well, the future is always uncertain. The past just feels more certain because now we know what really happened. When the headline says stock market enters a painful correction, you should read it, if you're saving for retirement, you should rejoice as stocks fall on the weak. Those with decades to save and invest should hope it continues. When the headline says such and such could cause gold to rise to $1,500 an ounce, the way you read it is total guess. No one has a clue. How about investors panic as stocks enter a bear market? I'm sure you've seen that one. You read it, don't panic. Expect future returns and dividend yields to go up during bear markets, and that's a good thing for long-term investors. How about this one? The 10 best stocks to own right now. I'm seeing a lot of that in January, February. And you read that by saying, here are 10 random stocks we think could go up for reasons which we're purely speculating on. And then finally, is Facebook, Snapchat, put in any name you want there. It's the hot stock du jour. Is this stock a buy here? And how you read that is chances are by the time you see a fad stock in the headlines, you've already missed the big move. So now I know you get the picture. The bottom line is know your own goals, know your time horizon, and don't trade too much. Capitalist economies like in the U.S. and other countries have a secret sauce, and the market that tracks them will reflect that over the long term.